how does government evolve in terms of culturally to support innovation? I think, you know, I think a lot of the smart community, smart city concept, a lot of it has been, hey, I've got this new little tool. Isn't this new gadget so cool? Hey, city, come buy my gadget. And then that kind of drives some change. And then, you know, you figure out a year or two later whether or not that gadget was really cool. And then it gets replaced by another gadget. And we sell a gadget and we love our gadget and we want to work hard on making it more and more meaningful, of course. But I think the trends are around how to get leaders to lead and create the culture of innovation inside the organization.
Hi, Smart Community friends. In this episode of the Smart Community Podcast, I have a really interesting chat with Bratton Riley, the founder of CityBot, a customer service tool for governments and companies. Bratton tells us about his background in local government and community and his shift into business and technology, as well as his passion for connecting residents and government through digital platforms. We discuss how important trust is between local government and residents, and the challenges and opportunities of working in the public sector, and why supportive leadership is so important in local government. Bratton then shares with us a little bit about CityBot and the work that his company does, as well as why it is so important to them to facilitate equal access to government institutions in underserved communities or those with accessibility challenges. He tells us about some of the key learnings and successes from working with cities and counties in the US, as well as ways local government can use data to make better decisions, improve user experience, and create opportunities for residents to be engaged. We finish our conversation talking about the emerging trends of evolving government to support innovation and developing vision and outcome-focused local government leaders. As always, we hope you enjoy listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed making it.
Welcome to the smart community, smart regions, smart towns, and smart cities. It's where we live, work, and play. With smart communities, the future starts today. Big data, smart mobility, emerging trends galore. The Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.
Hello, Bratton. How are you today?
I'm doing fantastic. Thank you, Zoe. It's nice to be with you.
Yeah, you too. I'm so glad that you're able to come onto the podcast. Now, let's just jump straight in. And can you tell us about your background and what you're passionate about?
Sure. So I am here in Charleston, South Carolina in the U.S. And I grew up here. And my father, when I was two, my father was elected mayor of the city of Charleston. So I had a very interesting growing up life experience, very enmeshed in local government and politics, but also, you know, I was taught early on what the meaning of community is from, you know, experiences that was different from my peers for the most part. And so that really has etched a real picture in my brain early on about what community means. And so I grew up in Charleston, went off to college, lived in Brazil for a while, which was a wonderful life experience. And I came back to study law and business and worked in the maritime industry for a number of years, traveling quite a bit in Central Latin America and some in Southeast Asia. And then about 4 years ago, I got the call to switch over into the technology space. And not too long after that happened, the idea dawned on how could we better connect residents to their local government through chat and through the channels, through chat, through text and web and some of the other channels that are out there. So embarked on that journey in 2016, and it's been quite an adventure ever since.
Yeah, wow. And you know, like you've already touched on this a little bit, but let's go to what sparked your interest in this, what I call the smart community space, which is exactly what you're talking about, which I love, because we talk a lot about smart cities, but you've brought community in from the very beginning. So what sparked your interest in this space in particular?
Well, number one, I know what relationships of trust are like between a local government and its residents, because I watched one of the greatest mayors you know, certainly in the last probably 50-100 years in the U.S., build those relationships of trust with his residents. And that's my dad did that. And so I think that's the essence of where smart communities start, is really the interconnection of trust between the people and its government. And we see a lot of examples today of where the trust doesn't exist. And, you know, as you take the concentric circles outside of your locality and go to the federal government space, the trust is not there like it is locally. So it really starts with, you know, the privilege that local governments have of relationship with every single one of the precious people that lives in the community. And so why I care so much about it is it's basically in my DNA, number one. And then number two, I saw an opportunity with technology to make it easier for residents and their local governments to be more connected, to get accomplished what residents need, help governments accomplish what the residents need in a simpler, easier, and more responsive way. And it's been fun. It's been, you know, we could talk for a long time about what it's like to sell new technology to government that are not early adopters necessarily of new technology. But that's part of the challenge, is to make the case and show the results.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to, and you've already kind of answered this, but what is a smart community to you?
I think a smart community is where the values of the community and the decisions that the government make are intertwined. And so, you know, that starts with understanding your community values and then having leadership in the government to make those connections and create the vision to live out the community's values. And then also leadership to inspire the people that work in government to actually go be creative and go make mistakes and try to figure it out, and to get behind those people to actually do the work, whether they're successful or they make mistakes. And I think I see a lot in government, a lot of fear that employees have, the people that work in government, there's a lot of fear of making mistakes because they think there'll be consequences because of that. And, you know, the public eye is on what government does, but that's where leadership should be there to support the people that work in government in a better way. So I think where you see the smart communities, in my opinion, you see that connectivity between the vision, the values, and the support of the staff to actually bridge the values with the innovation so that the community can achieve, you know, what its goals and values are.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's so interesting. And I think what you said about government and, you know, people within government being afraid to make mistakes, I think that's so true. I mean, and, you know, I'm talking about Australia, you're talking about America, but I wonder if it's a global issue. I have talked to people with, say, in the Netherlands, and their approach to being a public servant is very different. It's like it's a real privilege to be a public servant. And it's not about where you are, but, you know, when I visited them, it's like, you know, you're in a co-working space and these people are delivering government services. And the people I talked to had such energy and they were doing all these new things. But the main thing was that they were there to serve the public, and what a privilege that is to be able to do that. So I do find that different approaches around the world, but particularly traditionally, it is a fear of making or failing it's not a crazy fear because of the repercussions that we've seen, and particularly now with 24-hour news cycles and social media and that type of thing as well, you can get really slammed. But I also think that if we can build that culture that it is okay to have those calculated risks and have that, and even learnings rather than failure, I think we'll be able to really push forward in this space.
I agree with you. I think, you know, talking about the U.S. and, you know, the question around whether this is a global thing or not, it's a very interesting question. I think just within the U.S., there are different regions that I think it's hard to generalize, but there are success stories in different regions. You know, I live in a state, it's South Carolina. It's a conservative state, and there's a culture here of government not being the solution, and there's a culture of government being sort of a bad thing. And so as a consequence of that, when bad stuff happens, like COVID, for example, you know, because the investment in government and because there isn't that culture of public service and there isn't that the emphasis on what a privilege it is, and, you know, you can get caught in a situation where government's not ready. And, you know, it's like we don't like government until we really need it, but you can't just rely on government when you need it. There's sometimes when you don't. And I think that's a challenge that we face, certainly where I'm located. But there's other pockets in the U.S. where there are different gradations of the public service privilege, as you mentioned. In general, there's a lot more of that in local government. You know, it's like when I talk to potential employees and they're asking me what it's like to work at CityBot, one of the first things I say is, you get to hang out with people that work in local government. And 99.9% of these people are amazing because they truly care and they truly are public servants. And it's like a little family atmosphere. And it's such a privilege that we have being a vendor in the space to be able to interact with so many of these amazing people all around.
Yeah, absolutely. I love working with local government. Because as you said, and, you know, there is this perception, like on my website, right, I have a, you know, I don't know, whatever, something very insightful about what I offer. And then the last point is that I care like a public servant. And I have had people say, oh, but like, what does that mean? Because in a lot of the community's eyes, a public servant in Australia is not a desirable thing to be. And I think that's, and, you know, you shouldn't put that on your website or whatever it is. And I'm like, no, we need to change that. That's what we're, you know, if we don't, like that, the word, it's not the language, that's what it actually is. But we need to change that mindset, because if we don't, what you said before was so insightful around, you know, only if we're only looking for the government when we need them, they're not ready because they don't have the skills to, I guess, serve the community, or not have the skills, but just, you know, if we're only looking to them when things are bad, then we can't build that trust. We can't do these things. And then both sides aren't ready to have that relationship, I suppose. So that was really insightful. So thanks for sharing that.
You just said it a lot better than I did.
Oh, no, so. I don't think I did. I think I was like, oh, no, just recap and just replay what you said. But, yeah, I think that's, yeah, really key. And I think if we can start to shift that, and that, you know, we can start to really, I guess, amplify what a privilege it is to be a public servant, I think we can see better things happening, because also you can attract people into that service, as more people into that service that have that, you know, that attitude that you were talking about, where they really want to serve the public. And I think that's also super key into this space. And I also, yeah, want to change the narrative in that, to them, younger people are also encouraged to be into the public service. And, you know, and I'm talking about Australia, you're talking about America, but it's across the board. We need to have that diversity of age and thought and backgrounds in the public sector, because they're serving our communities, which are a diverse mix of people.
Exactly.
Okay, let's talk about you. And can you tell us, give us the 101 on CityBot and also the work that you've been doing in this space? So yeah, we'll start with, give us an overview of CityBot.
So we started about 4 years ago with a text message product. You know, the U.S., you know, text messaging is widely used. 97% of U.S. adults text message. And, you know, we're not as much on WhatsApp yet as some of the other countries around the world, but that's a very important communication channel. But text message is a non-intentionally discriminatory communication channel because everyone's using it in the U.S. So, you know, when we talk about building relationships of trust, and what I like to talk about is I want people in the public housing, people that live in the lower income neighborhoods, to have the same privilege of access to government that the people in the fancy houses do. We talk a lot about the digital divide here, I'm sure elsewhere as well. And it oftentimes refers more specifically to access to high-speed internet and the divide economically, socioeconomically, and the haves and have-nots around that. And that's a very important issue Very. But what we talk less about when we talk about the digital divide is what about the digital access to these government institutions, equal access to government institutions. So, and that's very important. And, you know, a lot of these institutions here in the U.S., you know, some people will definitely disagree with what I said. We're grounded in institutional racism. I'm here in the South, and there's no question about it in my mind. And so we have to kind of fight against the tide of those that had more privilege than others to actually get what they need out of government. And so the great equalizer wasn't necessarily the best business idea in the world, but the great equalizer for us was text messaging. So that's what we started, a product where you could interactively text message with to get your service requests in, potholes, missed trash pickup, or whatever. And then also to be able to, at any point in time, just send in a direct message into your local government, and our product responds instantaneously to all these types of communications that residents want to have with their local government. So we started doing that with text, and then we invest a lot in integrations into the software ecosystem, the tech ecosystem that we arrive at with a city or a county. You know, everyone's going to be different. And so one of our value propositions is not, hey, stop using the tech ecosystem that you're using to use our widget to use CityBot. No, let us very respectfully come in and work within the ecosystem that you have. You've spent a lot of time and money investing in your technology. Let us fit ours into yours. So we started with text, and then we realized that, okay, this is great. This is sort of a resident-initiated conversation that's very important. But what about conversations initiated by government? Let's enable government to push out these text message communications. And because we're powered by an AI-powered chatbot system, that local governments can push out communications, and then it enables residents to respond directly back to those communications. Maybe it's a weather issue. Maybe it's a COVID issue. Maybe it's a vaccine update, just like we've done with some of our customers. But to, if you imagine that diagram or in your head of communications coming into a local government and communications going out of a local government, what we see is that the communication staff, or maybe they have a 311 here in the U.S., they're maxed out and they can only handle so many one-to-one communications. So our technology through automation is enabling those to happen 24/7. And then we just launched about 7 months ago our web chat product for the local government website. So think of us as kind of a free agent, AI, machine learning powered chat technology that will, you know, nestle ourselves into the tech ecosystem of local government to make it easier for residents to interact. And then the other thing we do is we actually build the marketing campaign to help our government partners launch this new system. We found that, number one, local government communicators are super busy. They've been unbelievably busy in the last 12 months with COVID, and they were very busy before. And then we found that a lot of local governments just haven't necessarily emphasized or invested in self-promotion and marketing. And so we want to stand shoulder to shoulder with them to help them do that, because I'll have conversations with local governments all the time and they'll say, you know, Bratton, we just don't promote ourselves very well. And we want to help them do that. And then finally, we generate all this data through the communications that are happening with our system. And we use that data to help our government partners make faster, more well-informed decisions, because it's more data around what is in the hearts and minds of their residents. And we present that back to them so they can ingest it and examine it in real time. And so that's what we are up to.
Yeah, cool. So if I'm a resident, I can text a number and say, when is my rubbish bin pickup?
Yep, that's right. Or, you know, it hasn't been picked up. Can you come pick it up? You know, or.
Yep. And so that information then goes into the correct channel of, you know, so the waste facility branch or whatever. And then they go, oh, okay, there's lots, for some reason, this whole area hasn't been picked up. What are we going to do about that situation?
Exactly. Exactly. Or you lose your dog, graffiti painted on a building, or, you know, the pothole, there are a bunch of potholes, or whatever it might be. We just want to enable those conversations to happen very easily. And then there are the conversations, because local government's so cool, and because it does so many different things, between keeping you safe and picking up your trash and finding your lost dogs and all of that, there are conversations that need to be elevated to talking to someone. And so we want to make sure that this is a broad generalization, but what governments have done is they have imputed the knowledge of government functions onto its residents, thinking, oh, of course the resident knows what department does what in our government because we live it every day. And so since we live it every day, the resident should know what it is that we do. And the reality is the resident doesn't know, nor should they know. And so the beauty of our technology, the beauty of a call center, which is an amazing high level of customer service, the 311 systems in the US or call centers, you can call and get help, is that you enable the resident to say what it is that they need to say and not project back information from what the government wants to say and thinking that the resident is going to understand that. No, it's like, let's put the conversation back in the hands of the residents and let them use their words to get what they need. And so that's, and governments are starting to think about things like, well, what's the user experience in interacting with us? You know, that's a new thing. And so we try to encourage that, you know, when we're talking to governments and certainly through our products.
Yeah, I think that user experience is a new conversation, isn't it? An interesting one, and also a really necessary one. If we want to improve the trust, the relationship, you know, if you're talking to your friend, you basically have it, you know, they're your friend because you get a good experience with that person. If you're always like going, oh, I don't understand what they're talking about, they're not listening to me, you know, I don't know what's happening here, then, or they expect me to know all this stuff and I just don't know and I feel silly because I should know, in inverted commas, people on podcasts won't be able to see me doing this. Inverted commas, I should know what to do. And you feel, you know, like, oh, I don't know this stuff or whatever, I feel uninformed. Yeah, you're not going to want to interact with that person. You may have to because maybe they're your next neighbor or whatever, but yeah, that's not a good relationship. Whereas if you want to build that relationship, you know, the friends that you hang out with, that, you know, they're nice to you. They tell you that, they give you the information that you need when you need it. They interact with you in a way that, you know, is comfortable on both ends. So I think, it's interesting. And I think that's such a huge part of the smart community space too, that isn't talked about enough. And I talk to a lot of people about engagement, but actually there's that, but there's also that user and customer experience, which in the private sector, they're all over because that's, you know, their bread and butter. So what can we do without overstepping in marketing, in the sense of like behavior manipulation and those type of things? We don't want to overstep in that side of things, but we want to be able to engage and interact with our community members. And then they go, oh, that was a nice experience. I'll do that again when I need help with this, or when I've got a really great idea that I want to share with my government.
Or maybe I want to get involved in my neighborhood group, or maybe I want to go vote. I didn't really want to vote, but I had this good experience with my government and it inspired me to want to be more connected and use my voice. You know, it's like, it's not a shortcut thing, in my opinion. You've got to create those opportunities for engagement so that we can, you know, inspire more people to want to be a part of the process.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, that's great. And thanks for sharing that. I was going to go to the future, but we'll stay here for another moment. What governments or councils or whoever are you currently working with? And have you got any key learnings that you were a bit surprised by?
So yes, a lot. So we're working in the US, we're working with cities and counties, and we're in large cities like Fort Worth, Texas. We're about to launch in New Orleans, which is actually a collaboration with the city and their county that is called a parish in Louisiana. And then we're in a lot of smaller communities as well, with 5,000 to 10,000 people. And it's fun. The variety is a lot of fun for us because you know, in the smaller cities, the C-suite is very small. And obviously in the larger cities, it's quite large. But there's been a lot of learnings, and that's the beauty of capturing the data of the conversations is you learn a lot about your residents. One thing I use an example is in Arlington, Texas, which is a city of about 400,000 people. We launched with them in January of 2020. And of course, COVID hit in March, early March. One thing we realized as an example in that 2 month period is that like 25% of the questions from the people were around pet adoption, asking their city government about how to adopt a pet. The beauty of data capture is no one had any idea going into it that many people were going to ask about that. But it was just like, this is so cool. Like that we're helping connect the dots for people to adopt a pet. Little do we know we're about to all go into quarantine and like all of a sudden these pets were going to get like a lot of QT with their pet owners. So that was, you know, there are learnings like that that happen all the time. And so you assume. And the beauty of data is the data takes the assumption out of the conversation and you can actually see for yourself what's happening. And there's been a lot of those lessons learned. I think another one is just the power of collaboration for us. The most joyful things that we do is when we are called to action by one of our customers to do something in the moment because something's happened. And that happened last week in Texas. This is the terrible weather experience that basically the whole state had for almost an entire week that started with icy conditions and freezing temperatures and power outages and then water that was not potable water that was not making it into houses. And it set off a whole, you know, crazy chain of events that no one had anticipated. And a lot would argue that it was foreseeable, but it had not been anticipated. And so one of the things that we helped the city of Fort Worth do is get the word out to his residents about these water distribution locations that they were setting up where people could show up to these certain parts of the city and they could get water. So it's just like they asked us to do that at the end of last week and we stopped everything we were doing, said, yes, we can help you. Let's do it. And, you know, it happened a few weeks ago with Brownsville, Texas. We hadn't even launched with them yet, our system. And it was the day before they were opening up a vaccination clinic, which is amazing. There's not a lot of cities yet in the U.S. now that are operating their own vaccination clinic. But the city of Brownsville said, yes, we are going to do that. And they reached out to us on a Thursday around lunchtime and said, can you help us push out text messages to the 1,700 people that just signed up to get a vaccine? And we hadn't even launched our product yet with them. We said, sure. And then that was lunch around dinner time, we got the message out to everyone. And the next day, 2,000 residents were vaccinated. And I got a text message back from their communications director, a great guy named Felipe Romero. And the text message said, you helped make this happen. And then he sent all these pictures of all these senior citizens with their masks on and their arms in the air and these little stickers in their hands saying, I just got vaccinated. It's just like, there's nothing cooler that we'll ever do than that. But it's just nice to be there to answer the call when your customer needs you because you want to help the people and you want to help build the relationships of trust, which is exactly why we're in the business to do what we do anyways.
Mm. Yeah, and it's those kind of magical moments that make it all worthwhile, right? But then also really, really small ones too that I imagine you probably have, you know, nearly every day where you are making a difference even to somebody that, yeah, maybe they've lost their pet or whatever it is, but making sure that they have that connection with their local government or government, which is so key.
So I communicated to my team after the vaccination event, and it was just like, you know, a lot of times you go work for a company and then it's outside of the company that you're trying to check the community building, the volunteer, help a friend out, help a neighbor out. And I was just like, to my employees, just like, isn't it beautiful that what we get to do in our day job, which is a for-profit enterprise, what we get to do in our day job are these things. And, you know, you were mentioning about millennials and how they work and what their interests are in. And a lot of those precious people that I know are really about mission. They want to be, you know, they want to connect their work to what they want their community to look like or what they want their world to look like. So it's, and you don't have to be a millennial to want to do that. I'm a Gen Xer and it's important to me too.
Yep. No, absolutely. Okay. Well, I think we could talk for a very long time. We're not going to wrap up just yet though. I want to head to the future now. And what are some of the emerging trends that people aren't talking about enough?
So I think there are many. You know, I think the trends that I like to look at are less technologically focused, even though that's what we are in. But the trends that are more interesting to me are in how does government evolve in terms of culturally to support innovation? I think, you know, I think a lot of the smart community, smart city concept, a lot of it has been, hey, I've got this new little tool. Isn't this new gadget so cool? Hey, city, come buy my gadget. And then that kind of drives some change. And then, you know, you figure out a year or two later whether or not that gadget was really cool. And then it gets put replaced by another gadget. So there's, you know, there's always going to be, you know, and we sell a gadget and we love our gadget and we're, you know, we want to work hard on making it more and more meaningful, of course. But I think the trends are around how to get leaders to lead and create the culture of innovation inside the organization. And I think there's some existential pressure on these governments to do it faster. And some, there's some great examples out there. I always use San Jose, California as an example. There is no confusion in that government around the leadership and how the city innovates. And I know there's some great examples in Australia as well. So I'm seeing that trend and I want to see more of that trend and how we develop the government leaders to get out of the way and support the innovation that, again, feeds back to my definition of a smart community, which is the matching of the values and the vision and the technology investments, as opposed to, hey, this new gadget's really cool. We're going to look cool because we got this new gadget that tracks how many cars drive down a street between certain times a day and then feeds all this data back somewhere. But it's just like, no, we create our vision, our values, and then let's match it up with technology. So I'm hoping to see a lot more of that trend, if that makes any sense.
No, it definitely makes sense. And it's about like having, and they're kind of buzzworthy, like having the vision, the strategy, that type of thing. But actually, if you've got that and then you know, you're not going, oh, how do I fit an autonomous vehicle into my community? It's, no, our community has this vision of where we want to go, what pieces of technology, but also non-tech, lots and lots of non-tech, what we want to see change, we want to see transformation, communication, these type of things. So it's actually the outcomes, you know, you're talking about outcomes and then you work out what tools, and I don't even like technology, but what tools will fit within that. And, you know, I think some of those things will be that you want to test and try things, and that's fine, like, you know, particular types of technology, but then you work out what, you know, does it fit in your tool belt or no, not right now. And then I think that's, which is what you're talking about, which is that the leadership knows where they want to go with the community, right? You know, this is all about bringing the community along the journey, but also creating it with them. And then, yeah, picking up your tool belt and working out which tools you need.
Absolutely. I mean, a great example, and this is totally different from what we do, but I think about a lot, is just like, you know, there's the need to invest in infrastructure. In the US, our road system is not where it should be for this moment, and maybe not the future moments, but at the same time, how we get from point A to point B 50 years from now is going to look a heck of a lot different than it does now. So how do you actually, maybe we invest less in extra lanes in a road versus more infrastructure on top of buildings so that we can have people move on drones safely from one place to the next? You know, I don't have the answers, but it's like there's so much money in investing in the infrastructure. It's like, well, what are the leaders? How do the leaders pull the innovation and see where the future is and pull that back to the moment and decide what kind of investments we need to make in infrastructure? It's a hard thing to figure out, but I think that there's quite a time lag between where we know traveling and commuting is going to go with the decisions that are being made on whether we build these roads or bridges right now.
Mm. Yeah, I think it's important, and like it's deciding on what, if we talk about the mobility example for a second, it's like, do we, you know, it's behavior change as well, right? Do we want to encourage people more active transport, more public transport, mass transit, because, you know, that's the most effective way to move people and that type of thing? Or do we continue to focus on roads and congestion, because then we'll just get more cars and congestion? Like, that's what, and you know, people have been talking about this for ages, but it's like, well, is there a new technology layer that we can add to that as well? But also feeding in all those really important design elements and place and all those type of things is really key. When I traveled around the world, you know, looking at places like Amsterdam, you know, people talk a lot about, well, you know, public transport doesn't work when it's not dense enough and all those type of things. But if you're actually investing really heavily in it from early stage, it'll look different, right? You know, there'll be a combination, particularly in Australia and America. I feel like, yes, the private car may still play a, you know, large role in our lives for many, many, many years to come. But can we use it less? Can we have one less? You know, can it be sustainable? Can it be just not, you know, I guess a menu, you know, we choose it when we absolutely have to, but otherwise our places are created for us to be able to walk around safely, cycle safely, you know, scoot. I don't know about drones, but I have been to it, like in North Carolina, actually, the public showing of the autonomous drone. They're not big enough yet for me to, so I'm like, oh, that's just a car in the sky. but who knows, like, you know, teleportation, who knows? Like, and, you know, that's crazy. I've never talked to anyone about teleportation on the podcast because maybe it's just not viable, but.
That effect on people.
I want to get out of here. Really interesting stuff. Well, Breton, it's been so great to chat with you. And I've been saying this a lot lately because I feel like I've been having some really great conversations with a lot of my guests. And yeah, this has been no different. And I feel like we could talk for a lot longer, and definitely keen to chat again for sure.
I look forward to it, and I agree. Well, there's 15 different directions we could take our conversation, and I look forward to doing it. So thank you so much.
Yeah, digital divide, and yeah, many things in that space, and yeah, we'll definitely have another conversation. But I just want people to be able to connect with you. So how can people connect with you?
I think probably the easiest way is email, which is Breton@citybot.io. And our website is citybot.io. You can find me there as well. And we'd love to talk to you and serve you. And that's what I tell everyone. It's just like, we get to serve the people that serve the residents. And so that's quite an honor for us. So that's what we want to do for our government partners.
Excellent. And we'll put all the links in the show notes so people can click away and find you. Thank you again for coming onto the Smart Community Podcast. And I look forward to our next conversation.
So do I. Thank you, Zoe, so much.
Thanks, Breton. Bye.
Bye.
The Smart Community Podcast is brought to you by My Smart Community. If you're looking for support in podcast strategy and production, workshop design and facilitation, or communication and media advisory, get in touch. Email hello@mysmart.community or head to www.mysmart.community.
Thanks so much for listening to the Smart Community Podcast. Show notes for this episode and all other episodes are available on our website, mysmart.community/podcast. If you have any questions for us or any of our guests, you can email hello@mysmart.community. You can also find us on the socials. We are on LinkedIn and Twitter @smartcomhq. That's com with 2 M's. If you are enjoying the podcast, please hit subscribe so you never miss an episode. And we would love for you to leave us a rating and review at wherever you listen. This really helps us reach more ears and eyes, so thank you for your support. As always, we hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed making it.
The Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.